Good Tuesday afternoon to you, everybody. Thank you so much for joining me. Welcome to the Spencer Wilson Show. Welcome inside ESPN Studios. My name is Spencer Wilson. Thank you so much for joining me. We got a fun show for you. It's Tuesday, so we'll take a look around some NBA headlines as another week is in the books. 18 weeks of the NBA season is now done and over with. Week 19 starts today. So we'll take a look at some headlines. We'll take a look at some of the standings and how some spots have changed, although not a ton of movement. Everyone, especially in the East, everyone kind of hunkering down, holding position. We had a few changes there in the Western Conference, but take a look at that. Of course, end of the day with the daily pick. But first, wanted to start off by talking about Champions League. We had two more of the UEFA Champions League games going on today from the round of 16. It is still the first legs. We had four of the first legs of the round of 16 last week. The other four first legs will be today and tomorrow. We saw Chelsea from England taking on Bayern Munich from Germany in Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, which is in it's not actually essentially a real place. It's a little it's a team, a club in literally in the center of London. But Chelsea playing at Stamford Bridge, hosting Bayern Munich. And Chelsea had a good record against German clubs coming into their home ground of Stamford Bridge in the past. I believe this was the 10th time a German club has come into Stamford Bridge. And they haven't won before. They've either lost or Chelsea has gotten out of there with a draw. And this was the first home loss to a German team in Bayern Munich. Really crushed them there in the second half. 3-0 ended up being the final. So Bayern Munich now gets to go back to Germany for leg two in March and not only have a three-goal lead, but have those three goals be away goals as well. So it is really going to be a tough challenge for Chelsea now on the road, down three goals, essentially having to score four to even give yourself a chance. Whether you win 4-3 or you're tied at 4-4, that'd be four away goals, which would give Chelsea the pass through to the quarterfinals. But a tough challenge there for Chelsea, and a late red card as well. You could see the frustration really starting to boil over with Chelsea, especially since the first half was so back and forth. Both teams, you could really see the evolution of the offenses between both teams as the game went on. Both teams started off a little tight, but they kept developing more and more of a push towards the other team's goalkeeper throughout the first half, and both teams getting some good looks right around the 40th, 41st minute there. So able to both, you know, essentially to have the game up for grabs and be able to take advantage of that in the second half. And you kind of felt like Chelsea was going to be able to do that in front of a home crowd, getting some chances there at the end of the first half and possibly coming out in kind of a blaze of blue and just putting some pressure on Bayern Munich. But unfortunately not the case, as in the 51st minute, Bayern Munich was first on the board, and they added another goal just a few minutes later. And then one of their stars, Robert Lewandowski, adds another goal in the 76th minute. And that was probably the easiest of some of the three goals there for Bayern Munich. But a big, big-time win for them to start. And, of course, Bayern Munich having success in the group stage as well. They won their group, winning all six games, so essentially a perfect run through the group stage for Bayern Munich. Six wins, 18 points, and pretty substantial wins throughout some of these games as well. 3-0 over Red Stars, 7-2 over Tottenham. That was just a flat-out mauling of one of the better English teams there. But then a 3-2 win, you have a 2-0 win, so there were some close ones. 6-0 again over the Red Stars, 3-1 over Tottenham, so Bayern Munich really flexing their muscle through the group stage. And even though there were some close calls for Chelsea in the first half, that second half, Bayern Munich returned to that kind of group stage form and just put more and more pressure on Chelsea until they broke through essentially for three goals there in the second half. And then, of course, we had the other round of 16 matchup today, which saw Italy's Napoli taking on Spain's Barcelona. And a 1-1 draw is how that game ends in Italy. So now Barcelona will get to go home in March for the second leg with a chance to get the win with one goal. And then, of course, having a road goal as well in their back pocket. But a tough game there. I mean, both of these clubs, kind of like Chelsea and Bayern Munich, playing each other very hard, very tough there in the first half. Both teams getting some opportunities opportunities. Of course, Napoli breaking through in the 30th minute with Mertens getting a 30th minute goal to put Napoli up 1-0. And Barcelona was kind of on their back foot the rest of the first half, able to get some pressure and get some looks. But Napoli did a great job of defending that one goal lead for the final 15 so minutes of that first half, and really did a good job through the first 10 or so minutes of the second half. And then, of course, Barcelona is Barcelona. They have just incredible talent, a lot of stars, and the young French star Griezmann, who played a huge role in France's World Cup win a few years ago, gets the goal in the 57th minute to tie it up at 1. That's how the game ends. So both of those teams going back to Barcelona level. But of course, like I said, Barcelona with that one road goal that might help them get through to the quarterfinals. But if the second leg is anything like this first leg, it's not going to be a walkthrough for Barcelona. Of course, being at home in front of those rabid fans at FC Barcelona, it's going to be a lot tougher for Napoli to, I think, handle that kind of environment. But Barcelona looking good. Again, took some chances there in the second half that ended up paying off, getting a goal there for Griezmann, one of those chances. But Napoli able to hold their own. I mean, this is one of those round of 16 matchups where it could have gotten a little lopsided. Take nothing away from Napoli, but Barcelona's having the success that they've had in the last 20 or so years in this Champions League, being one of the more successful clubs right there with Real Madrid. It could have gotten ugly, and Napoli did a great job not only getting out in front of Barcelona and making them play catch up, but once they were able to get level at one goal apiece, Napoli did a great job of still helping defend their goal and continuing to put pressure on Barcelona. So I'm excited to see what that second leg will bring. But tomorrow we will have the final first legs of the round of 16. Real Madrid in Spain will host England's Manchester City, and then France's Lyon will host Italy's Juventus, of course, with Cristiano Ronaldo. But that is where UEFA Champions League stands right now. But the CONCACAF Champions League also gets back in action tonight. 2 games. We do have Jamaica's Portmore United going up against Mexico's Cruz Azul. That will go down in Mexico. Cruz Azul coming home with a 2-1 lead on aggregate, also with those 2 road goals. So they're sitting in a nice spot. And the other matchup going down tonight in the CONCACAF Champions League features an American team. Atlanta United FC hosts Motagua from Honduras. They are equal at 1 each after the first leg. So coming back with the second leg, Atlanta United's a goal away essentially from putting themselves in a good spot. Should this end 1-1, should neither team score tonight, Atlanta United will get through because of that 1 away goal they scored in the first leg. Should it end 2-2 after tonight, then we will go to extra time in a shootout during that game, because it'll be tied on aggregate and each team will have a road goal. Should we get to 3-3, essentially any tie beyond 3-3, Motagua will win that contest and move on to the quarterfinals, because that means that they've scored way more than just 1 away goal. So we'll hope for either a 1-1 draw or a 2-2 draw, or that Atlanta United just wins on aggregate and so they can punch their ticket to the quarterfinals of the CONCACAF Champions League. Other games going on, a big day will be tomorrow with 4 games going down, but again, Atlanta United FC in action tonight as a American-based team. All 4 American teams really in an okay spot. The only one that isn't is LAFC, but other than that, Atlanta United FC, Seattle Sounders FC both tied at 1-1 in favor of Atlanta United, 2-2 in the case of Seattle Sounders, but New York City FC with a 5-3 lead and have 5 away goals, that really helps set yourself up for success there on the road or just in two-legged competitions in general. So for the most part, we got all 4 American teams looking relatively good heading into these second legs, and I would like to see an American team for the first time get to the finals, maybe win for the first time in the CONCACAF Champions League. But we'll see as Atlanta United goes. I think that's 5:00 here on the West Coast. Atlanta will play Motagua in Atlanta, Georgia. But that's where we are in terms of Champions League. Did want to talk quickly about Formula One as we approach the second week of preseason testing. Tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday will be the final 3 days of testing before we wait another 2 or 3 weeks until round 1 in Melbourne, Australia. But a lot of interesting questions going into this second week of preseason testing. Will Mercedes continue to be out front? They went 1-2 and 2 out of the 3 days in week one. So are we going to continue to see that kind of domination? Will we see what we saw last week with Hamilton leading one of those 1-2s and Bottas leading one of those 1-2s? Will Bottas kind of surprise everybody and lead a Mercedes 1-2 multiple times this week? Will Hamilton kind of show that world championship strength? A lot of questions, not so much about the performance of Mercedes, but I feel like the dynamic of Mercedes. How will Valtteri Bottas carry himself? How will Hamilton carry himself? And what more innovations might we see from this Mercedes team? That DAS that they're doing with the steering wheel this year, if you haven't seen that, essentially, the drivers, if they pull the steering wheel towards them, it actually kind of narrows the angle of the front wheels to help with just draft and the way air flows over the car, and they can push the steering wheel back away from them, which thus kind of straightens and widens the wheels back out. So that was kind of the big engineering headline from the first week of testing from Mercedes. So will we see just the continued development of that new system for them? Where we see an introduction of something new that Mercedes is working on this year? And essentially, that's why they're so good, right? I mean, no other team is showing us something like that, something new and useful and exciting like that, where you can, manipulate the steering wheel to essentially manipulate the angle of the front tires. And obviously, their turbo hybrid engine, their setup has been the best for the last six seasons, hence the reason they've been able to do six straight double championships. But then again, we look for somebody to challenge them, and Mercedes comes back to testing with something like this, and it makes you feel like, how is it going to be any different this year? And a big question about that is, where are Red Bull and Ferrari? Are Red Bull going to be able to show a little more speed? You know, Verstappen up towards the top, and Albon up towards the top in one of those days in the first 2 days. But then the third day out of the 16 cars that were on track, they went 8th and 10th. So not blistering speed from Red Bull at all. And then, of course, where is Ferrari? I mean, there was the talk of an aerodynamic issue heading into preseason testing, about a month out of preseason testing. And it doesn't seem as though they've found a quick solution to that, as they were still struggling on times. I mean, day one, 15 cars that ran, Leclerc was the only one out there, finished 11th. Day two, they went 6th and 8th out of 13 cars. And then day three, Sebastian Vettel went 16 cars there on the track. So maybe Ferrari, after the disappointment of last year, after wowing everybody in preseason testing, and then completely just falling off and essentially racing nobody up top at Australia, maybe they're kind of pulling something off. There were some reports that maybe they were sandbagging through the first week just to kind of lower expectation, or maybe try to divert some of the attention away from them. But ultimately, I think there are struggles right now for Ferrari. I think they weren't really expecting to be as off the pace as they were last year, and they maybe have tried to overcompensate with fixing something, or just tried something kind of a little more on the radical side, and it hasn't worked. But if Ferrari can't show us that there's a little more pace to them, maybe not all the way up there towards the top five, but at least be consistently in the top 10 with both of your cars this week, to, I think, give us some kind of hope that there might be something there for Ferrari. Because right now, it's looking like an easy Mercedes 7-peat. That's what it looks like. So, and also, outside of the big three, are we going to see the same pace from Racing Point? I mean, this is a team that had one of their two cars in the top four all 3 days of preseason testing through week one. So are we still going to see speed and timing from Racing Point? Renault has had some good runs with Ocon and Ricciardo from the first week. So are we going to see that? Or McLaren going to show up? Because they had just an okay first week of testing. So how is this mid-pack going to develop in between Renault and McLaren? Racing Point as well. Also, I keep wanting to say AlphaTauri, but Alfa Romeo, that was what I'm thinking of. Will Alfa Romeo show up? Because Kimi Raikkonen topped the timing sheets in day two. Out of 13 cars, his Alfa Romeo was the fastest one by 0.2 seconds. So how are we going to continue to see this mid-pack battle develop over week two of preseason testing? So a lot of interesting questions, a lot of interesting things to watch for. Again, that starts essentially tonight at midnight. Midnight to 9 a.m. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday are the times here on the West Coast when you could watch some preseason testing. But interesting to see how it all develops here for week two. And then, of course, just a few weeks away from Melbourne, Australia, which is crazy to think about. But excited to see what Formula One has in store for us this year as the new cars and the regulation changes are on the horizon in 2021. What will this final year of the rules and the cars that we have now kind of give us? And it's looking like it's another Mercedes walkthrough, but we'll see how it goes. Let's hope that's not the case. But when we come back from the break, week 18 of the NBA season is done and in the books. So we will check out standings and where some teams are now as we head into the official home stretch of the season. Coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN. To learn more.
Hard to believe we are through 18 weeks of the NBA regular season. It seems as though Christmas Day was just a couple days ago is what it feels like. But we are through 18 weeks. We are coming towards the end of February. We are within 2 months of the regular season ending. So we are into the home stretch and not a ton of movement in the standings this past week in the NBA. Especially zero movement in the Eastern Conference, which has been relatively surprising. I mean, there's usually been a little bit of movement either middle of the pack or bottom of the field, but I think essentially all except for those weeks that involved the All-Star game. So to see no movement here is a little surprising, but Milwaukee, the first team to clinch a spot in the playoffs this year for the NBA, is the earliest they've clinched a playoff. I think it's in 15 years. So Milwaukee, but again, that just shows you the dominance that they have had this season. The Eastern Conference was there for the taking this year with LeBron now gone from it was right there. I mean, Milwaukee, Toronto being the defending champions, Boston, Philadelphia, those I think were the kind of the four teams everyone looked at as to who would be able to grab the front, the front of the pack of the Eastern Conference, and it has been Milwaukee. Giannis Antetokounmpo and Chris Middleton have led this team to a first place standing right now. They are into the playoffs. They are 49-8. And those are really the two guys that have led the way. They've also gotten some help. Eric Bledsoe has been one of those guys as well. Has been there for them and been able to hit some bigger shots, handle possession, be able to help them down the stretch of a game. But for the way that Milwaukee has played, this has been a very impressive season, an impressive run. And after last season, Antetokounmpo with his MVP, I think there was a fair amount of attention on him. But again, this Eastern Conference was fairly wide open this season. So even though he was the defending MVP, you had the Toronto Raptors who were the defending champions. So I think there was a lot of attention on those two teams. You also had Boston, you also had Philadelphia, and Milwaukee just essentially said, forget it, we're taking this. And it's been relatively close throughout the NBA season, but Milwaukee now with a 7-game lead over Toronto there in second, and Antetokounmpo again has been leading the way. Milwaukee 3-0 this past week with wins against Detroit, Philadelphia, and Washington. Antetokounmpo leading the way in scoring in two of those games, rebounds in all three, and assists in one. Middleton and Bledsoe filling in the other gaps in leaders for points and assists, but it has been a breakout, even more of a breakout season for Antetokounmpo. He has cemented what he did last year and the award that he got last year and is making a great argument for winning it again this year. It's beginning to be a very tough decision to see who the MVP is, but I think Giannis Antetokounmpo has done a great job there in Milwaukee, and looking to see what he can do. Of course, they play Toronto tonight, so that's a huge matchup in the Eastern Conference there, and Milwaukee on the road against Toronto, that tipping off, I believe, at 4:30 today, so that'll be a big match to start the 19th week of the season. And then we have Boston there in third place, still 9.5 games out from Milwaukee, 2.5 games back of Toronto, and Boston not going to be able to get their hands on the Raptors again for the rest of the season. They no longer have any games scheduled against Toronto. They have a few games left against Milwaukee this season, so they have a chance to affect the Bucks there. But Boston's going to have to rely on help from the Eastern Conference to possibly get up to that second seed there in the East. But those top three, You know, Milwaukee, Toronto, Boston, teams that have played great team basketball this year. Toronto has not fallen off the ledge like some people expected them to. Without Kawhi Leonard being on that team, they've really done a great job of holding their own. I mean, Serge Ibaka, Pascal Siakam, Kyle Lowry, these guys have really come together to show the team basketball that they can play. Same with Boston, with Tatum. Walker obviously having his issues here and there, but what he's been able to do in the lineup, Gordon Hayward as well. It's a Boston team that's also played some great basketball this season there. And then Miami still there in fourth, holding on to that fourth spot in the Eastern Conference. They were able to have a decent week. I mean, they had some tough games. That game against Atlanta, I think that was the one where Trae Young dropped 50 points on them. So, or you know, I think it was 50 points. So sometimes players just have nights like that. You can't really do anything about it. You just got to tip their hat. That was coming right out of the All-Star break. So Trae Young was nice and rested, getting ready to launch some more threes and able to do that. It was a close loss still, too, for Miami, so it wasn't like they got blown out of the gym, but one of those nights where a guy's on and you just can't stop him. But then they had back-to-back games against Cleveland. They won the first one at home, 124-105, lost the second game last night in overtime, 125-119. But Bam Adebayo, since coming off that, I mean, the run that he's had to the All-Star game and coming back from the All-Star game, he just keeps contributing to this team and keeps showing them that he's developing his game, becoming more of a weapon for that Miami team. So can't wait to see how they continue to develop him. I mean, the game against Cleveland last night, they lost in overtime. He led the team in both points, rebounds, and assists. And he is becoming one of the more recognizable players from this season in the NBA. So can't wait to see how he and Miami, with Jimmy Butler as well, close down this season there in the Eastern Conference, see if they can keep that fourth spot. And then Philadelphia, some tough news for the Sixers. Ben Simmons out at least 2 weeks, it sounds like, or he'll be reevaluated in about 2 weeks as the Sixers sit in fifth still there in the Eastern Conference. Luckily, they stopped swapping spots with Indiana. That felt like was really hurting them. They just couldn't seem to get away from the Pacers, and they were trying to break into that top four. Joel Embiid did take over in their most recent game against Atlanta last night, and B dropped 49, just took over for that team in the fourth quarter. But it's been tough going for the 76ers this season. There was, I think, a lot of hype around what they could possibly do this year in the East, of course, with it being wide open at the start of the year. And they just haven't really been able to find that perfect rhythm, find that good consistency to keep them up top and keep them competitive there with the top four in the Eastern Conference. I mean, they are only half a game out of Miami. I'll be looked at the 4-game gap to Boston, the 6.5 gap game gap to Toronto. They just haven't been as competitive as I think I expected them to, and I'm guessing their fan base expected them to as well. They are still in a playoff spot, but now they've lost Ben Simmons. What does that do to the chemistry to this team? What does that do to just the way that they operate out there on the court? Now, essentially, all focus is going to be on Joel Embiid from any of your opponents. Not that most of the focus wasn't already there, but now you don't have Ben Simmons. It's going to be tougher for Embiid to stand out. Not saying that he still can't do that. But for Philadelphia, the good news is Indiana did not jump you again this week. You are still fifth. You're right there behind Miami for a possible top four spot. Now, how long Simmons is out for, how much this affects their run leading up to the playoffs is still yet to be seen. But I think the best thing for Philadelphia would be for Simmons to, if he's reevaluated in 2 weeks, he can come back, maybe come back lighter in the game, you know, not as many minutes, and then get ready to kind of buckle in and try to make a run through the playoffs there. That might be the best thing for Philadelphia. Then Indiana stays in sixth. Brooklyn stays in seventh. Orlando stays in eighth. That is the top eight in the Eastern Conference right now. In the bottom half of the East, all stayed the same. Washington, Chicago, and Charlotte to Detroit and New York, and then Atlanta and Cleveland rounding out the bottom of that conference. Then in the West, a little bit of movement there. Obviously more than we got in the Eastern Conference. The top three stayed the same. The Lakers, Denver Nuggets, and Los Angeles Clippers continue to lead the way there. The Los Angeles Lakers have the longest active winning streak in the NBA, a 5-game winning streak, and 7-3 in their last 10 games. Of course, coming off the two wins this past week against Memphis and Boston. With the LeBron James and Anthony Davis show in LA. They just continue to essentially run rampant. They are 43-12, five games up on Denver in second place there. So this is a Lakers team that has really clicked from day one. I mean, LeBron James and Anthony Davis have seemed to be on the same page. They like playing with each other. They seem to really have a good chemistry and a good understanding of how the other can succeed and what the other can do to help the other one succeed. So it's been fun to watch those two. Seemingly just really enjoy themselves this year. Anthony Davis, even though he was out a little bit with that tailbone bruise or whatever he had after the hard landing there on the court a few weeks ago, but he's come back and they essentially haven't skipped a beat. And they got games against New Orleans coming up, and I'm excited to see what New Orleans can do. They're one of the teams that moved up this week, and they're getting closer to being a possible playoff team, so can't wait to see how that matchup goes down. They have a game tonight as well, do the Lakers and the Pelicans. They'll also play again on Sunday, that being in New Orleans with the game tonight being in Los Angeles. So that could be a fun matchup to see LeBron and Zion on the same court tonight and Sunday. But the Lakers still in first place, five games up on Denver, who's still in second. The Clippers finally back to full strength. They had, I think, for just the fifth game this season, they had their entire roster at their disposal with Patrick Beverley and Paul George being healthy. Clippers looking good. They also are on a solid, back to full strength. They're 5-5 in their last 10 games, but the way they looked last night in the last game is the way I think we expected them to be able to play with these stars, and we're seeing that, and their time's running out to be a little more consistent, but what we saw in their last game is a great preview of what we can see from this team. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Clippers come down the stretch here of the NBA season. Houston up into the top four again. They have moved up a spot from fifth. Seven games back of the Lakers, but the Rockets, three wins this week against Golden State, Utah, and New York. So, Utah, those should be two games that Utah wins, and they did so by a hefty margin, 135-105 over Golden State and 123-112 over New York. And this whole question of can Houston win with small ball, I think they can. If there's a team that can do it, I think it is Houston. With the way they can shoot and the way they can just get down the floor and put up points on you in a hurry, size doesn't really make a difference to how you do that within the NBA. So I think the fact that you have Harden and Westbrook that can just get up and down the floor and score points, they have some good role players and support players. So Houston, if anybody can win with small ball in the NBA, I think it is the Houston Rockets. So we're going to see how it pays off as we get closer to the postseason, into the postseason, when obviously we know that teams are going to crack down even harder on James Harden and Russell Westbrook. But right now, they went 3-0 this past week in the NBA. They got games against Memphis, Boston, and New York coming up this week. So those are three games. Again, Memphis and Boston not going to be easy with both those being playoff teams right now, but games that they can win and can continue to show that this small ball lineup is exactly what they need for the way they play. So we'll see how it works out. But I got a good feeling about Houston, this small ball lineup, and just maybe not necessarily that it's the end-all, fix-all problems for the Houston Rockets, but it is a good step for them to understand how they can play basketball to their best ability. I think the small ball idea for them works really well. Utah fell a spot from fourth to fifth place. OKC, Dallas, and Memphis held their spots in sixth, seventh, and eighth place, respectively. And then we get to the bubble teams. Portland just 2.5 games back of Memphis there for that eighth spot. And Portland has been playing some good basketball as of late. The big question, and I think the big point of interest really, is what is going to happen to New Orleans? The Pelicans have been on the rise since Zion has gotten onto the floor and started to contribute to this team. They are now up another spot this past week into the 10th place spot in the Western Conference. They're only half a game back of Portland, just three games back of Memphis there in that 8th place spot. So New Orleans, there was this joke at the start of the year that J.J. Redick said that he's perfect in his career in terms of season and playoff appearances. Even though he's played for a few different teams, he's always made it to the playoffs. So he was joking that now it's on Zion to get him there and keep that 100% playoff appearance record up and going. And when Zion was injured at the start of the year, I think we all kind of assumed that was it for New Orleans. They were going to have to wait for next year to really see this team become the Western contenders. And it just hasn't been the case. Zion's come back and made a huge difference and just given this team an extra hit of life as they go through this Western Conference. So only three games back of a playoff spot. New Orleans is in no way, shape, or form out of that playoff opportunity yet. So can't wait to see, again, that game against the Lakers tonight, but just can't wait to see how they continue to develop and how Zion continues to contribute to this team. He led the team in scoring against Portland and Golden State this past week, so we'll see how he continues to contribute to this team, but it's looking like a more and more of an exciting finish for New Orleans this season. San Antonio dropped a spot to 11th, and the bottom four in the Western Conference have stayed the same with Phoenix, Sacramento, Minnesota, and then Golden State at the bottom. But that is where we are in the standings after 18 weeks of the NBA season. Remember, week 19 starts tonight. Talked about that New Orleans LA game as well as Milwaukee and Toronto. So those should both be some exciting games for week 19 of the season. But when we come back from the break, a few other headlines and notes from around the world of the NBA. We will talk about that on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Alrighty, welcome back. Some more news and notes from the world of the NBA there. It was nice to see the memorial service yesterday held for Kobe Bryant. If you haven't gotten a chance to go online and see some of that and just see just the passion. I mean, the passion that people had for him, that he had on the sport, for the way he affected everybody. I mean, from Shaq to MJ to Ionescu from Oregon. I mean, just it was a range of men and women and old and young, and just to see the different ways that they all got to remember Kobe and see how he affected the game. And it was a good mixture of emotion. I mean, I feel like yesterday was the first chance the basketball world really got to just take a deep breath. I mean, we're almost a month past the accident. January 26th was when the crash happened, so we are almost a month beyond that. And really, since that day, it has felt as though the world of the NBA hasn't been able to really exhale. Everywhere you look, there's a mural, or there's someone with a Kobe jersey on, or, I mean, even look at the Celtics and Lakers rivalry. Bill Russell was wearing a Kobe jersey on his way into that game. So everywhere you looked, it just seems like you were reminded that he was no longer here and he wasn't physically with the family of the NBA anymore. And it just felt like yesterday was a chance we all got to exhale again. Hearing Shaq tell jokes, hear MJ mocking himself again for crying and knowing that's going to turn into another meme for the next 3 or 4 years. Just to see all of that and to see the laughter and the tears again, it just made everything feel kind of okay again. And we've heard from LeBron James, we've heard from Doc Rivers that it just isn't going to be the same probably for the rest of the season. You still feel it everywhere you go. You still know that he's not here. I mean, LeBron James has really shown his emotional side in this whole thing. And every time reporters question him and push him about it, it is, just the same message that it's tough right now. It's tough for them to focus. It's tough for anyone to really move on and get anything done in the NBA without having the thought of him on your mind. But we don't really want to totally forget anybody. That's not the point of those celebrations of life. It's not to do that and then move on and forget entirely. But again, having those moments yesterday where, you know, Shaq tells a story of when he was coming off the bench or coming off the floor at halftime for a game and he was talking to another player or coach about how Kobe wasn't necessarily sharing the ball. So Shaq goes over to him and tells him, "Hey, Kobe, there's no I in team." And Kobe says, "Yeah, but there is an M-E in team." So just those type of things that you know, these little stories that were told and everyone just gets a good laugh and chuckle out of it just makes you feel good. So it was great to see that. It was great to see again, Vanessa Bryant up there talking about her husband and daughter. It was just good. It was just lighthearted. I think it ended up being lighthearted. So it was a fun celebration of life. Again, it was expertly done from everybody there in Los Angeles in the Staples Center. So hats off to everybody for just being able to really just put on a good celebration and being able to, again, give us all kind of a chance to exhale and move on to this final home stretch of the season, which is going to be real interesting because we just talked about the standings. But again, Philadelphia now without Ben Simmons for the next few weeks, he's going to have, he's going to be reevaluated in 2 weeks to see where he stands. But now all the pressure goes on Joel Embiid. What's that going to do to Philadelphia? What does that do to their play in the paint? Obviously, all the attention now is going to be on Embiid. Not that it wasn't, because this season has been more about Embiid than it has been Simmons. A team that really, like most teams in the NBA this season, had two stars, and they were going to look to both of those stars to not only further themselves and further their player development, but further these teams in their pursuit for an NBA championship. And with how open the Eastern Conference was until Milwaukee grabbed the reins and started running away with it, it was Simmons and Embiid, but it was always kind of Embiid overshadowing Simmons, I feel like, this year. And now that Simmons is injured, it really is going to become the Joel Embiid show there in Philadelphia. Now, whether in 2 weeks Ben Simmons is able to come back or not, this changes the way Philadelphia approaches this home stretch of the season. And we'll just see what has to happen. I mean, Embiid obviously is in a position where he can carry this team. We've seen that with his 49-point performance last night, taking over in the fourth quarter. He was able to flex his muscle as well in the playoffs in last year as well. So he's definitely capable of doing this, but the question really comes down to, what is it going to be with Simmons? Is he back in 2 weeks and they can continue to kind of chemistry and further develop that chemistry between the two of them as they get close to the playoffs? Or is this a situation where Simmons could play in 2 weeks, but they're going to go ahead and keep him off the floor until we get to the playoffs and then essentially have to make this deep run into June while these two men are continuing to, again, further this chemistry? So in an up-and-down season for Philadelphia, this is kind of the last thing you wanted to see, was one of your big stars going down, because we just talked about it with the Clippers. This was a team that just got their whole roster back for, I think, the fifth game this season. And we could see that when Kawhi is out there, when Paul George is out there and Patrick Beverley is out there affecting the game on both sides of the ball, this is a dangerous Clippers team. They've solidified third place. They're playing well, and they have a chance to catch Denver. Maybe not to catch the Lakers this year with the way LeBron James and Anthony Davis play, but the Clippers have shown that when they get their entire roster and that star power ready to go, they're very tough to stop. And Philadelphia has shown spurts of that this season. But again, without Ben Simmons there to play off Joel Embiid, you're just kind of stuck with whatever Embiid gives you. And if he has one of those nights where he just kind of jogs up and down the floor, he wants to take fadeaways instead of working hard towards the basket, you're kind of just at the mercy of what your bench or your role players give you, which is not the place to be if you're in the Eastern Conference this year with the team basketball that teams like Toronto, Boston, and Miami have played this season. So for Philadelphia, it's a very tough spot. It's a tricky spot to be in for them. I think that there is obviously still hope. They haven't fallen off the battle there in the Eastern Conference at all. So depending on whether or not Simmons can come back in 2 weeks and really get on the floor and get some hefty minutes in, I think will determine the strategy as they approach the playoffs. But tough spot there to be in Philadelphia. And, of course, we talked about the Clippers just now. They look as if they are back in real winning form. So we'll see how that goes. Again, how does Kawhi Leonard and Paul George kind of continue their chemistry? Another duo that has had issues either with injury or just with load management, which has become a huge talking point in the NBA this season. You know, how long do you keep your stars out for if you want to rest them, especially in the back-to-backs, which was a huge talking point in the first half of the season with Kawhi Leonard. But this is a Clippers team that is healthy now. They can allow Paul George and Kawhi Leonard over the next, I think, 24 or 25 games, whatever they have left, to really focus on their chemistry and how they can build teamwork on the floor. And Patrick Beverley, I think it's more about him leading the way on defense. He's shown that that's where he really likes to kind of bite down and show his full-on basketball skill, whether it's shutting down LeBron James or it's shutting down Anthony Davis or whoever it might be. But I think you have Patrick Beverley kind of leading the way there on the defensive end, and then hope that Kawhi Leonard and Paul George can further that chemistry between the two of them and put up a fight, because it could very well come down to Anthony Davis and LeBron James against Kawhi Leonard and Paul George there in the Western Conference Finals, especially if they're 1-3 or 1-2 in the West, the only way they could meet in the postseasons in the Western Conference Finals. So the more the Clippers allow those two stars to build momentum and build chemistry, the more they'll give themselves a chance in the postseason, because right now LeBron James and Anthony Davis have a lot of solid chemistry. LeBron's not trying to push Anthony Davis out of the low post area, out of the paint area. He's allowed that to be his space, and he is really thriving working along the perimeter and being more of a point guard, which I think a lot of people laughed at the start of the year when you heard the word point guard and LeBron James in the same sentence. But he has really grown into it and become really a true point guard. I mean, he's already being a team captain. He knows how to be a team leader. So to give him that outright opportunity and put him in that position on the floor, I think it's given him kind of a new lease on basketball and has helped the Lakers really develop Anthony Davis as that inside threat, and Dwight Howard as well, for what it's worth. I mean, Dwight Howard didn't give us anything really in the dunk contest. I don't think a lot of people expected a lot of stuff from him this year, but he's contributed to the Lakers. He's given them some kind of different look down there at the post when Anthony Davis needs a rest. But for the most part, LeBron James hasn't tried to force himself down low or into the post play for the Los Angeles Lakers this season. And I think it's done a great job to allow that offense to really explore all their possibilities. And also, guys like Danny Green that can come off the bench and hit threes for you right and left are just irreplaceable this time of year. So Lakers are in a good spot. And started off by talking about Kobe Bryant and Bradley Beal, who was one of the bigger All-Star Game snubs, has become the first player since Kobe Bryant to score 50 points on back-to-back nights. Now, of course, they did lose both of those games, which is pretty surprising to think a player can score 50 points and still lose. But one of those games was against the Milwaukee Bucks, so what do you expect? But also, if you just look at some other numbers, Beal's shooting 58% from the field, 8-13 from the three-point range. Just absolutely crazy. And that was after he shot 56% and scored 43 against the Chicago Bulls. So talent around this NBA, again, it shows you how open this Eastern Conference is this year and what it could possibly produce there in the playoffs, because it looks like it's Milwaukee's to take right now. But don't doubt Boston. Don't doubt Toronto. Don't even doubt Miami or Philadelphia. And who knows what we could see from the rest of this NBA season. But right now, again, it feels like we can finally take a bit of a deep breath and really settle into the home stretch of this NBA season as we are within 2 months now from the start of the playoffs. And, of course, we do know our first team in the playoff field, that is the Milwaukee Bucks. We'll see who's the next to join them. I got a feeling it's going to be one of those teams from Los Angeles. But we will find out. When we come back from the break, I'll give you my daily pick, as I usually do, and talk about what to look forward to tonight. That's coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Before I get into the daily pick, wanted to remind everybody that the men's basketball team has their final away game, their final true road game against Wyoming, and that tip is set for 6:00 right here on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. John Rainey will have the pregame for you at 5:30, again with that tip at 6:00. And then the women's team had their senior night last night, their second to final game of the season, their final home game. They played Wyoming and unfortunately came up just a little bit short. 84-79 was the final in favor of Wyoming. And Wyoming came out and had a big first quarter, 22-13 there in favor of Wyoming. And then Nevada came back, had a very even second quarter, and then outscored them in the third and the fourth quarter. And were able to make it a game, but really, if it wasn't for that first quarter, Nevada could have possibly squeezed it out there at the end, but unfortunately just did not work out for the Pack on senior night. We had two starters in double digits, Essence Booker and Deja Hamilton. Booker had 17, Hamilton with 13, and then Imani Lacey and Amaya West off the bench had 16 and 13 points as well. The bench battle was won by Nevada, 33-14. They outscored Wyoming. Unfortunately, though, again, just not enough for the Pack to beat Wyoming here at home. But the women's team, the final regular season game for them will also be their final true road game. That happens on Thursday at San Diego State. So be sure to tune in then. We'll remind you on that day as well. But then to end off the show, my daily pick to give you that, I had success in the world of the NHL last night. Picked Columbus. They won in overtime, so that felt good. Going to stick to the world of the NHL as we will talk about hockey tomorrow. I'm going to go with the Tampa Bay Lightning over the Toronto Maple Leafs at home. Tampa Bay still playing some really good hockey. They did have that long winning streak snapped, but that winning streak essentially took them from, or was kind of the big catalyst in taking them from wild card team to top three team, one of the top three teams there in that Atlantic division. So I'm going to take Tampa Bay at home. I was also looking at the Rangers and Islanders game, that Battle of New York of the Islanders as the home team, but I wanted to go with Tampa Bay and Toronto, hoping that the Tampa Bay Lightning can give me a win. Just didn't know who to go with there with the Rangers and the Islanders. With the Rangers being on the road, maybe the Islanders are able to pull it off, but that's a tight matchup between the two New York teams this year. So I'm going to go with Tampa Bay at Toronto for the daily pick. But that is the show. Thank you so much for tuning in again. The men have a game tonight, pregame at 5:30. So do not miss that right here on ESPN. This is a men's team that is 18-10. They win tonight. They win on Saturday. They can finish the season 20-10 overall, which would be a great feat for Coach Alford and this coaching staff in their first season. And then, of course, see what they can do in the Mountain West Conference. Anything can happen when you get into tournament play. So be sure to tune in again pregame starting here on ESPN Radio at 5:30, tip at 6 o'clock. John Ramey will be on the call for you. Again, that is the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Tune in tomorrow, 2 o'clock. We will talk again about Champions League, also about NHL headlines and the NHL weekly reaction as well. So tune in for that and have a safe rest of your Tuesday. Peace.